The Garth Newell Music Center is situated in the Allegheny Mountains in Bath County, Virginia. It's less than 3.5 hours from Washington, D.C., but it's a world away. Founded in 1973, Garth Newell is home to one of America's premier chamber quartets. Come along and join the conversation with violinist Teresa Ling, Evelyn Grau on viola, Isaac Melamed, cello, and pianist Jeanette Vang. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer.
Garth Newell was started by artists back in the 1920s, and essentially William Sargent Kendall and Christine Herder Kendall were both artists who built this place, and they spent many years painting, and they would have soirees, and then in 1973, they met Luca and Arlene DiCecco. The DiCeccos were musicians, and Christine had been trying to figure out what to do with this huge property, and so they decided that they would begin putting concerts on here, and Luca and Arlene began to bring their students. That's how it was born.
And here we are today. The legacy continues.
That's right, exactly.
We're here with 1, 2, 3, 4 musicians who are full-time professionals. And tell us a little bit about your story.
I'm Evelyn Grau. I play viola. And I guess I'm the old one here. I've been here since 1983. This has been my dream kind of a place. Even when I was a musician studying, I always figured, well, I'll end up in some big city playing in an orchestra, and I don't like cities, but it's what I'll have to do. And then fell into this place, and it's out here in the boonies, so to speak. Lovely rural setting, peaceful and quiet, which is what I absolutely love. And then I get to make great music with great colleagues.
Pretty rare, pretty extreme odds.
Yeah. Absolutely rare and extreme, yeah.
Teresa Ling, and I've been full-time at Garth Newell since 1998, so almost 20 years. I had always loved playing chamber music as a child, and I never thought it was possible to make a living at it. And so this is a unique opportunity to be able to play, as Evelyn said, with people you really enjoy playing with and in a gorgeous setting, and the opportunity to meet so many people who come to the concerts, and you feel like you're gradually building a family.
And your violin, that's your main...
Exactly, issue. I play the violin.
Mm-hmm. If we're going chronologically... Like in terms of like how long we've been here?
No.
No? Okay.
Random fire.
I'm Jeanette Fang, and I'm the pianist of the group, and I've been here for almost 2 years, and this is my dream job. That's pretty much what I wanted to do with my life, and I didn't think it existed. I went into music because I want to perform, and I want to perform with people, and I didn't think that I could actually make a living doing that, and I thought I had to teach somewhere in the middle of nowhere and have people who didn't really care about music as much, and I didn't get to play as much or whatever. So this was definitely what I wanted to do.
Very cool.
Yeah. My name is Isaac. I'm the cellist in the piano quartet. I've been playing here for about 3 years. I grew up in San Francisco, which is pretty similar to Bath County.
I'm not jumping in there.
So about 4 years ago, I was freelancing in the Bay Area, running around here and there trying to make ends meet, watching the cost of living slowly increase, or not so slowly.
Or rapidly, yeah.
Rapidly increase. And a colleague of mine in New Century Chamber Orchestra told me one day, you should check out this place called Garth Newell Music Center. I had no idea what it was or where it was, never been to Virginia. And he said... He had played there as a guest artist, guest musician, and he said, you will be amazed at what they do here and what goes on and how satisfying it can be for you as a musician, or so he thought. And so I did some research, I checked it out, and here I am.
I bet when you were in San Francisco, you never imagined that you would be here or a place like this.
That would be a true statement.
Let's back up. Give us a word picture of this as a music center today, what it does.
It's pretty astounding, really. Sean, our executive director, is always saying we play, 60 or more concerts here, and it really feels more like 100. It's very nonstop. So there are concerts year-round. There are some seasons that are more intense than others. With the concerts, we very often, or pretty much always, I guess, pair them with some kind of gourmet meal, nice four-course sit-down meal with wine, or sometimes a real gourmet picnic. We have educational programs. In the summertime, we have college-age students that are here on fellowship for 4 weeks. There's also an amateur chamber music weekend that happens, one weekend out of the year, long weekend out of the year.
Do you guys function as instructors?
Yes. We serve as faculty and directors for these programs, and we do a lot of work with other high schools and in orchestra programs around the area.
Do you also do outreach where you go to them as well as?
Yes. Okay. There's a couple that we have an exchange relationship with, and so we will stay there and teach and give them a whole glut of educational activities, and then they'll come here and spend like a fun weekend here where we, again, glut them with a lot of activities, and they all seem to love it.
Talk to us about chamber music specific to here and your passion and what it's about.
Well, I think what I've always loved about chamber music is that it's a very democratic institution where you have, at least in our case, you have four people who each have very strong opinions, and yet we have to come together and create something that's bigger than ourselves, bigger than the sum of the parts. Mm-hmm. And
it's fascinating watching you guys because that word to work in concert applies outside of music. But very much seems like its birth probably was around music, that you guys have to work as this one collective being.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're right. We become one instrument when the four of us are playing together. I think that's something that I love about chamber music, which is different from playing in a symphony, which is that you still each are allowed to have your unique voice, and yet you're able to come together and do something wonderful between the four of you.
But there, and again, it's watching you, there's this intimacy, there's eye contact between you, where you go to a big symphony, a big city, and timpani's way back
right,
over there.
Exactly.
And you're watching
yes.
at a podium and not each other.
Exactly. Yeah. So that, to me, as a spectator watching, is the hugest difference.
Exactly. Yeah, I would agree. Mm-hmm. That's something that I love more than, you know, playing concertos, more than playing in symphonies. And so to be able to find a situation where we can just focus on studying this incredible repertoire is such a treat.
How much of it is visual and how much of it is more predicated on the auditory being in sync?
It's almost kind of not something that you would actually segregate into whether or not it's audio, auditory, or visual. It's sort of a feeling. Like, I can feel a cue, I can feel what somebody's feeling, and they express it through a multitude of ways, maybe physically, but it's or how they're ending a phrase and preparing for the next one. But it's sort of...
So it's almost energy-centered.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And I think the best thing about this group is that I get to know each one of them as people very well because we work together all the time and we even travel together and everything. So you get to know their tics and I don't know, it's like you anticipate what they're going to do.
True family.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or as Teresa puts it, a marriage, right?
You learn a lot about yourself in situations like that.
It's one thing to learn about yourself, but what can you think of something that you guys learn from each other propelling yourself as a musician?
How do you start? There's so much.
I know.
I mean, well, I think for me as a pianist, what I learned from the string players here, and particularly these people, is how to not be so hung up on yourself and how to really respect and be open to other people's opinions. A piano is usually a solo instrument, and so to play with other people is not something that we start with, and it's sometimes not even what we would consider a career path, but it's probably the most intoxicating feeling for me to play with other people because you're in the moment and you're really like trying to listen and react. And I think
it's a simultaneous thing because you're in that exact moment as you're trying to think ahead while it's happening.
Yeah, exactly. But I think like, I mean, string players have always kind of shown me how really to listen because they're listening for blended, listening for so many different things. Whereas a pianist, you just play often. So, I mean, I think it's constantly teaching me how to be a better musician in that aspect.
Interesting, yeah. It's different than violin in what she would be doing.
Yeah.
Well, I find that What I love about this group is that we don't spend a lot of time talking. And so the way that I learn is, for example, if Isaac does something incredibly beautiful, I learn something, and I try to see if I can match that or sort of play off of it, or if Jeanette gets these incredibly soft colors, and I'm going to try to see if I can get into that soundscape. And then Evelyn has this amazing sound on the viola that she gets because she, you know, uses gut strings, and, you know, she sounds like no other violist. And so it's wonderful to try to to make it all come together so that all of you can learn from each other.
Jump in.
Jump in, right. Oh, wow. Yeah, I feel like every time you sit down, you're learning something with your colleagues. And a big thing for me that actually sticks out, and it dates back to earlier times when I was working here with the founding directors, they were the older ones at that time, and I was the young kid on the block. And I really learned from them and I'm probably still learning it, to take risks musically, because sometimes it's so easy to be safe with the fingering or whatever, to make a phrase come to life, and then you realize, no, you gotta just go for something wilder or more bold, more brave, you know, take those risks to get the message across.
So you're reading notes, you're reading something that's been written for you, direction, but yet within there is this freedom of expression like you were talking about.
Right, exactly. And I think that what I love the most about this group, and there are lots of things that I love about it, but each of us are very, very different. I mean, if you were to write down our character traits, I think you would find four incredibly different people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that I learn the most from, the fact that they are so different, and yet I have so much respect for them and admire them in so many ways that I learn something beyond music from being with them all.
Give me another way that chamber music differs from a symphonic orchestra.
Well, I kind of wanted to say something about.
Yeah, don't know.
Well, it was mostly because you have to have the right group of people, and I think that what Teresa, Isaac, and Evelyn have taught me, and what I'm grateful for, is that I take a lot of risks, I guess, but often they're not successful. But they never tell me that it was a bad idea to take a risk. They often encourage the risk-taking. So I think that in a bad group, you can often be poo-pooed for that and shut down.
So you're encouraged to be a risk-taker, in other words?
Yeah, and that they're open to trying. And I think what that has taught me is that anything's possible. Because, you know, you can easily tell yourself, oh, I can't get that sound on my instrument. That's not possible. But it actually could be. I mean,
so in a way, they're helping you to explore
completely different possibilities, different sound worlds
that you might not have done on your own.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think the idea of teamwork just comes into play so much with our group and with chamber music in general. The idea that we're all in this together, and the idea that I could practice as much as I want on my own, and I could make sure everything I'm doing is exactly the way I want to do it. But when I sit in rehearsal and I play something with my colleagues, it could suddenly sound totally off, totally different. And the fact that we're only as good as the sum of our parts in chamber music, and it's so exposed the way that is. There's no getting around that, even if we wanted to. So we have to put our individual egos aside and just do what we can for the best of the group.
It's fascinating listening to you guys. Again, you are following a script. You're following a score. You're following notes that are written for you. But yet I come up with improv.
Yeah.
A sense of.
Well, that's something I just kind of want to address. The idea of following music and having a script, it's not a script. It's not so much like we have it written out for us. I mean, our job as musicians is to bring what's written to life. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have a life if we're not actually there to interpret it and to give it a life. So of course it is like improv. It is like we are creating something, because the notes are provided, but there's so much you can do with it and so many different things that you can do with it. And it, often we can play a piece very differently the next day from the day before. So
every time.
Yeah. Yeah, every time, yeah.
I think that's fascinating, really. And you were talking earlier about sometimes there are some pretty nuanced directions from the person that wrote the score.
There can be. Some composers are very particular about how they want every note played, and they want it played a certain way. For certain composers, especially ones that lived centuries ago, it's not as obvious what they want sometimes because they were less picky about what they put in their score. And so there's often a lot of room for interpretation. But even for the people who are very finicky and put in many different things, you still have to interpret that. You have to make sense of it. And if it doesn't somehow resonate with something you understand, then no amount of following picky directions on a score is going to make it come to life.
Interesting.
I agree.
Well, she got right to the point.
This is why she's so easy to work with.
That's great. Talk a little more from the heart.
Well, I mean, one thing about reading music from a score and then having the opportunity to work with composers is that you start to see that whether or not they wrote something, if you're convinced of what you're doing, and you can convince them very easily of your way of doing it, because it's just, music is from the heart, right? It is something true and something honest. So you have to approach it that way. And what you feel is honest, you give it life. And so therefore, if the composer wrote something and you're giving them your honest interpretation, more cases likely than not, that is what's going to be the one that's powerful. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And we were talking earlier about Haydn and personality and playfulness and attitude that comes through that you can intuit from their writing.
Exactly. And somehow their personality can come to life, even if they lived, you know, many hundreds of years ago. Mm-hmm. There's something about the human condition that is everlasting, and I feel like I get to know Haydn better every time I play more of his music.
Do you ever feel like you're time traveling when you're playing off a guy that lived 200, 300 years ago?
Felt like it tonight, especially after the way Teresa introduced the Haydn we played. And on that subject, I just want to mention a little bit about something that makes Garth Newell so unique, the fact that we do talk about the pieces we play, and we really try to make a conscious effort to engage with the audience on more levels than just performing. And there are many reasons why we do that. One of the biggest reasons is that we don't want audiences to feel alienated at all by the type of music we play, the fact that some of the composers we play have been dead for centuries. We want audiences to feel like everything that we do is interesting and fresh, and that they can be a part of what we do just as much as us. We don't want anyone to feel like we're in this stuffy atmosphere of classical music. We're trying to change those ideas.
Okay, so I have a story about this. No, simply because you say, do you feel like you're time traveling? And often, if we play music and we learn, like we live with it, we're not really thinking about time. Like, I'm not really thinking, oh, I'm playing a work that's from 200 years ago. I'm thinking mm-hmm. about right now.
Right.
And it becomes right now to me.
So it's a very contemporary process.
Yeah, I mean, because you have to live with it. But so my mom is a piano teacher, and she had in her studio grand piano, and then she had these big pictures. One was of Schumann, and one was of Chopin, and one was of Brahms. And I would be practicing that music because that's what, you know, you practice a lot of that music. And I was mortified because I'd see them staring down at me, and I was just like, they are hating what I'm doing. They're just like rolling over in their grave. And so I would like sit there and apologize to them out loud, just like, I'm really sorry that I'm doing this to you. Hopefully I can make it better. Like, it was just because when you're playing music, it's alive. And so the people who wrote it is alive to you too. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, yeah. But it feels more like they're traveling to our time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Looking, yeah. They literally were looking over your shoulder.
Yeah. Yeah. In a very stern manner. They didn't smile in those pictures. Yeah.
We need some new photos of them.
Yeah.
For time traveling?
Well, I was thinking of, I've been to Germany, I've been in concert halls in churches that are old, I mean, where Martin Luther was. And to sit in that seat and listen to an organ recital, you know, I imagine those who have gone before us, Mozart, when he was new and fresh and hot, and that you could have sat in a theater 200 years ago or whenever and listened to the same music that we can listen to today.
So do you feel like you're time traveling when you're sitting in one of those old churches?
Yeah, I mean, it's as close as you'll ever get. Mm-hmm. You know, that same music that they listen to when you're in the same church or the same venue, it's even more palpable.
Hmm. Well, I mean, it's funny because I think that, like, that's great to give you that picture. I think probably as a performer, I probably never thought that way. Mm-hmm. But it'd be interesting to kind of think that way next time.
Because I'm on the other end.
Yeah.
You're on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a sense of, for me, very often, of being in the presence of genius, especially for, I guess, the big, you know, like Beethoven, Bach. Sometimes in playing that music or just hearing it even, I'm just overwhelmed that I'm able to somehow almost touch, you know, a little piece of that genius or try to.
You're in their something. Brain because that music existed in their brain before they wrote it down.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And often tortured
as well, mm-hmm. Right? So you're feeling the same emotions, but on a very personal level. Because this is the thing, like, music will tell, you can tell all your struggles and your pains in music much more clearly than in words. There's a little disconnect with words, but with music it goes directly there. Mm-hmm. Like, you can connect emotions instantly. And so I feel like I know all these horrible tragedies and feelings and love and happiness and everything. But, yeah.
We were talking earlier about music as the ultimate international language.
Oh, yeah.
There is no translation.
Yeah. And it's the first thing that you feel, right? It's just, it's what's very, I always say this, sorry, it's very honest. And I feel like the problem with classical music, like Isaac talked about, is that people think it's not for them. But the thing is, like you said, music connects everyone. And it's something everyone can understand because it's emotion. You all feel. Unless you don't feel, then maybe that might be a problem. But I feel like if you feel, then you'll enjoy music and there's nothing else more complicated than that. Yeah.
And there's no wrong way to enjoy music either. Whether you know the ins and outs of music, you've studied it, you have the right background, doesn't matter at all. There's no wrong way to appreciate music. However, anybody reacts to music, whether it be crying, laughing, anything, just sitting there taking it in, that's the right way to appreciate music.
I think it's interesting that you were talking about music being able to communicate something more powerfully than words. And I think that's partly why I always was attracted to music, because I never felt like I had the words to express what I wanted to say.
And
it was
from our most articulate
She is our most articulate speaker. I look up to her speaking skills a lot.
So anyway, go ahead.
Well, it's like, just imagine.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, I remember as a child even listening to my teachers talk, you know, in third grade and feeling like I didn't actually hear words. I just heard the ups and downs of sound. And for me, that was more meaningful. And that was the way I was actually able to get meaning as opposed to what the words actually meant. So I was never very verbal. I think music
is...
Wow.
You're so good at reading people because you're reading beyond what they're saying. Like the cadences and how they're saying it. I mean, it's yeah, you pick up on a lot of things. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Surprise. Words versus music. Yeah, I like both realms, actually. So, yeah.
But there is that universality, no translation needed.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, and along similar lines, it brings to mind, music is the ultimate language, universal language, as you said. And then also, I've always felt chamber music is, to me, the example of a perfect democracy, the way it should work. Mm-hmm. Because, again, the teamwork, where everyone has a voice, everyone has a say, everyone is respectful of these different opinions, and we're all working towards one, you know, greater goal. That's kind of, you know, neat that it sort of encompasses a lot of things, you know, not just a language like that.
Now I'm finally getting to your question about what makes chamber music better than a symphony. I don't want to say better, but distinctive, yes, going off of what Evelyn reminded me, that playing in chamber music, you're not only conveying a democracy, you're also conveying a cohesion of four different interpretations. And in that way, because you hear solo recital, you hear only one point of view, and that can only reach so many people. But if you convey understanding of another person's understanding of another person's understanding, then you reach a greater understanding that, you know, it's going to be more, mm-hmm. it's going to be better, because you've got four, and then you have above that, and then you're going to reach a lot more people. So I think that's what gives chamber music an edge.
We were talking about music as this universal language that transcends the world, cultures, and everything. I would say also just a language that transcends generations and even time, seemingly. Just, it always amazes me to think, if you take a composer like Bach, who is regarded by many as just the pantheon of music, spiritually, emotionally, intellectually, and you think how long ago he lived, and then you think about how much humanity has, some might say, evolved, different things, technology, you think about how far we've come in certain instances, and you think nothing compares to Bach still.
Yes, that is very profound, I think, too, with somehow the greatness, and I guess it's the genius again that comes through. And there's, yeah, civilization changes, but that somehow stays constant.
And there's a contemporariness too.
Yeah, a good point, yeah. Exactly.
So it does transcend time.
Yes, exactly.
And I think that in chamber music, it can feel like a conversation between different people. And so it's a really friendly kind of...
Candy!
Yeah. Right. A wonderful, yeah, a friendly undertaking. And, you know, it can seem argumentative, mm-hmm. but it's so cathartic to be able to communicate in that way.
And again, looking from the outside, for me, there is that working in concert while you're also this whole another dimension taking place.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I would agree. Yeah. Right.
So it is this two planes going on.
Yep.
Any thoughts? No time limit.
Oh, there's a lot of thoughts, but I'm not as articulate, and they're all jumbled up right now.
Right,
so,
okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, you just described my brain.
Yeah, well, OCD, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
You can go to Evelyn first.
I would say go to Teresa first.
Oh, well, then I guess this is the end, isn't it?
All right, well, it's getting late. It's pushing midnight. For further information, do you have a website? How do people learn more?
Yes, at garthnewell.org. It's our website. We also have a Facebook page. Oh, Jeanette knows all those.
Follow us on Garth Newell Piano Quartet for our specific quartet happenings, and then follow us on Garth Newell Music Center for the whole year-round events. And then we have a Twitter and we have an Instagram. So if you just look up Garth Newell Music Center on both, you'll find us. And we'd love to hear from you. And also, Pinterest, there's a Pinterest. But I'd just like to say, even so, words seem to be failing some of us at this moment, you should come hear us play, because that's when you'll get to really know us. So, yes.
I am Isaac Malamed.
I am Jeanette Thang.
I am Teresa Ling.
I am Evelyn Grau.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Garth Newell Music Center, situated in the Allegheny Mountains in Bath County, Virginia.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.